Welcome, everyone. We're going to get started. My name is Colleen Flesher, and I'm the Global Commercial Model Innovation Lead for Johnson & Johnson, and I'm also the North America Lead for the Women's Leadership and Inclusion Group, which is our oldest and largest employee resource group at Johnson & Johnson. I'm thrilled to be here today to be your MC for this session to support the advancement of women leaders and to support this community that we're building in Pennsylvania and beyond. At Johnson & Johnson, we have an incredible responsibility to enhance and extend the lives of millions of people around the globe every day. And we understand the important role that women play in creating healthy communities. And we are focused on developing groundbreaking women leaders to transform the future of human health. J&J is proud to be a sponsor of the Pennsylvania Conference for Women. This conference offers a blend of practical tools and advice, inspiration, and peer networking. Through a mix of sessions, we are committed to empowering you to make your mark in your communities, in your careers, and in your companies. Thank you for joining this breakout session, Corner Office Success, How to Accelerate Your Career Trajectory, and we have an amazing hour in store for you. It's my pleasure to introduce Shoma Chatterjee, who will lead our panel today. Shoma not only has incredible credentials and experience, she's extremely passionate about this topic of advancing women's careers. Shoma is an executive coach with an impressive list of credentials in a number of focus areas, and she's earned her BA from Northwestern and 2 advanced degrees from Columbia, an MBA and a Master of Arts in International Affairs. Shoma's work experience includes roles in both the private and public sectors, including roles at Goldman Sachs and Deloitte, Federal Reserve, and the UN. Shoma focuses her research on advancement in areas that are personally very important and relevant to me, in these areas of producer environments, highly competitive areas of business, such as financial services and private equity. Shoma lives in New York, and she heads up the leadership development and coaching practice at GH Smart, an executive advisory firm. Please put your hands together and help me with a warm welcome for Shoma Chatterjee.
Thanks so much. This is very exciting, and welcome to the women and the great men here. So very, very important to have all of you here. So I want to spend maybe 5 minutes talking about our research that our firm did, and then spend most of the hour hearing from you about your questions. And, you know, I get to go back to being fangirl for these amazing women next to me, and I have tons of questions for them. So a little bit about our research. I work for a firm called GH Smart, named after a guy named Jeff Smart. Anyway, it's a 20-year-old firm, and we assess executives for a living. So firms would bring us in when they had 2 or 3 finalist candidates for C-suite roles, and we would sit down with them for 5 hours at a time and assess every dimension of their career. You know, there's normally a person like me, a business person in the room, but also a colleague who's a psychologist, because we like to look at both psychology and business, and we assess the executives. So over 20 years, we've gathered 18,000 assessments. And so being that we're all about, you know, data mining and data analytics these days, a couple of university professors, namely from the University of Chicago, said, you guys should do something with this. You're sitting on a lot of data. And incidentally, our firm is 51% women, and we said, okay, so thank you.
Yes, that's awesome.
So does our perception of CEO match the reality in our data set of, you know, 18,000 executives, and many of them become CEO or get to the C-suite? And what's our perception? I think you know what I'm talking about. You know, as my dad would put it, Mitt Romney-esque, square-jawed, 6'4", you know, Tony, you know, very white-shoed, Ivy League education, just done nothing wrong in their career until maybe the election. But, you know, really, but a solid linear path to success? So we set off asking these questions, like who makes it? Like who is this population? Why do they make it? Like what do they do to get there? And how do they get there? So the first thing we found out was like there were a lot of myths that we debunked. The first is, you know, only about 7% went to Ivy League schools and you know, followed that very linear path, lockstep to success. The second is 45% of the C-suite executives have had at least one career blow up, big mistake, high profile mistake. So it wasn't true that they had these unblemished records. In fact, you know, the way they handled that failure became a part of their success. What else do we find out? 33% of our sample are introverts or self-identify as introverts. And once they get to that C-suite position, they are just as likely, if not a little bit higher probability of success than the non-introverts. So being an introvert may hurt you a little bit during the interview process, but once you get there, you know, you have great chances. So what about women, you know, near and dear to our heart? 6% of our sample size, which made us sad because, you know, hopefully you'll all add to that over time. But, you know, 6% of 18,000 is still a good number. So we asked, you know, what if anything do women do differently? And long story short, you know, the probability of success just as high, if not higher, once women get to the C-suite. However, the path to get there is rocky, and that's where we'll spend most of our time today. What else? So a couple of things about, you know, how people get there, and then I'll introduce my star-studded panel here. One, they take a big leap. Roughly 33% of, you know, our C-suite candidates have taken a big, giant leap in their career. They didn't feel ready. They went through all the imposter syndrome gremlins that, you know, said you should do it, but somehow they did, and that was the pivotal moment. 66% of our sample went small to go big. So they either started something on their own, they, you know, went to a different country or a region and sort of led that area, all in the purpose of getting P&L experience, but also seeing a business end to end, like all the parts of a business. And then the last part is, you know, we say go big, go small to go big, and go clean up, which is they inherited a mess or they dove right into a mess. And that became, you know, very, very prominent. The most typical messes, you know, obviously are, you know, declining profits or turnarounds, but also a lot of people in our sample size, they cleaned up very messy technology implementation. So if you have an SAP or ERP implementation to clean up, it could be a great stepping stone for a career. So with that, you know, there's a lot of hows, and we'll uncover that through the hour. But let me introduce my esteemed panelists so I can go back to being fangirl, and we'll peel the onion on the how you do it, how you do it well. And by now, you know, we're all here at this conference, so we know that, you know, success is, you know, getting results times getting known. And, you know, three guesses as to where women, you know, don't do as well. They definitely get the results, but getting known, it's a nuanced thing, right? You don't want to toot your own horn. You want to post people but not boast. So we'll uncover some of that stuff as well. So think of questions, because Colleen will be back here to get your questions. So first, you know, first the three panelists. To my right, I have Joanne Ryder. She, many of you have seen her this morning, but she has skyrocketed to the top of a very easy peasy industry, financial Absolutely. Services. You know, it's amazing. But, you know, she currently is the EVP and Chief Administrative Officer at Beneficial Bank, but she's done it her way. She's done everything yes. her way. She's been pivotal in how that bank went public, how they shaped their brand, and she's a change leader through and through. And most importantly, she's on the board of Penn Conference for Women. So thank yes. you for
thank you.
For doing all of that. Second, we have Jen Welter, who was the person right here with her fan club that we couldn't disseminate, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. But most important is that she has the arms that I want, like arm goals. Arm goals.
Meet all of them. There you go.
I would only wear sleeveless day and night if I had Jen's arms. But of course, Jen is the first NFL coach who's female when she was when she joined the Arizona Cardinals in 2015 as a linebackers coach. She has many other credentials. My favorite one is she never stops learning, so she just up and decided to get a PhD in psychology. So we'll have lots of questions for Jen. And finally, you know, in the pink, in my right corner, is Cindy Eckert, who, you know, has come up with one of the most brilliant inventions in mankind, I think. She worked in Big Pharma, and then she started her own, a couple of companies, actually, the female Viagra. So she has come up with, you know, her
company. I don't have samples.
Oh, please, it's not in those bags. But she also heads a institution, really, called the Pink Ceiling and the Pink Incubator. So she helps women get access to not only capital, but know-how and mentors and sponsors as well. So we'll have great questions for her. But first, let me start with you, Joanne. So our research says that, you know, roughly, you know, 45% of people who eventually get to the C-suite have had blow-ups and failures. And choosing the right opportunity is tricky because you don't want to say no and signal to people that you're not up for it, but you also don't want to jump at the first opportunity. So help us understand in your career, like, how do you size up which risks to take career-wise and which to sort of say no to?
Sure. So I have a brand strategy background, and so when I look at my career and where I'm trying to get to, my goal is to be the CEO of a company one day. I'm fascinated by how companies work and how they operate, and so whenever I'm approached for a new opportunity or if I'm thinking about a new opportunity, I always take it back through that filter of my mission. And if the opportunity will allow me to grow and develop skills and experience to achieve my mission of becoming a CEO one day of a company, then I typically would take the opportunity. If not, then I simply say no. And if I'm confused or I'm not sure, I generally would then go and consult what I like to call my own board of directors. So I have a group of individuals that I have formed, and I go to for advice. I've kind of selected them just based off of interactions with them, whether it's personally or professionally, and they typically are someone that I respect, and they've accomplished great things. And so I'll go to them and I'll ask their opinions, and they never let me down. And so, you know, I think I'm very much focused on my filter, and I stay true to that.
Terrific, thanks. We'll come back to you because I have more I want to ask on that. But Cindy, you know, you've started two companies, you know, they're billion-dollar enterprises. You sold them, you bought them back for a much lower price. Tell us about not the successes, but the failures and what that's taught you and how you bounce back in a constructive way.
It's like, what day of the week is it? I've definitely had at least a failure this week. I think failure is just part of the process. And I think this is the important piece. You have to own it.
Yeah.
The difference is you don't get to own just the wins. You have to own the failures as well. And really embracing, I think, the ownership of that failure. I'll give you an example. When I was starting my first company, I got to this place, which was a critical tipping point for the business. I could finally really scale. And I did a deal with another company. I didn't have the capital to build out a sales force of my own, so I did a partnership with a company. And the ink wasn't even dry on the page before our philosophies departed like this. And so now I'm in business with somebody. I've taken their money. They're on my board. And we see the world through an entirely different lens. And so I spent that next year with the possibility of them crippling the business because of the nature of our relationship. Now, I worked, and the minute I could get out of that contract, I did. But it taught me a really important lesson, and that was I was choosing to. You know, when you're building something, sometimes you get these opportunities, and you think, oh, this is it. I need it. And I didn't take the deep breath and really decide that this, too, was my choice. Now, I also had the fun of going back to them and saying, if you'd seen the world through my eyes, I would have made you 40 extra money, but who's counting? So you own the failure and also have the fun of the comeback, but sit with the failure and let it basically drive you to success.
Thank you. Jen, how do we get rid of those gremlins that we all have that give us the imposter syndrome? Like, I shouldn't, do I really belong? You know, should I be here? But there's so many people in the audience. Who am I to speak? How do I get rid of that?
Well, I'm going to start with this. I feel like an imposter right now because I've never been in a C-suite. Seriously. And it doesn't mean I feel like an imposter because my world just isn't built that way.
Yeah.
Right? So the first part of, like, not feeling like you have to be what somebody else says, because you and exactly who you are and what your journey is your most powerful weapon. Okay? So you need to, like she said, own it. Right? First and foremost. Like, I can tell y'all how to be successful in a lot of ways, but if you're looking for a C-suite structure from me, guess what? You're not going to get that. You might get a little bit more irreverence, right? But sometimes that's what it takes to change the world. Now, one of the things that I'll tell women is we have a problem with elevating ourselves. Okay? We will often not grow into situations where guys will. I will give you a perfect example, okay? When I got my first opportunity to coach, okay? It's a funny story. It was a team I had played on the following season. I met a new head coach, and he was so impressed by me the next day, he called and said, you have to coach my football team. And I said, no. He said, excuse me? I said, oh, girls don't coach football. And I mean, there are no women currently coaching in men's professional football. None. It doesn't exist. And you want to drop kick me right into men's professional football? Like, no. And he said, Jen, not a lot of guys are going to give you this opportunity. You're taking this job. And I said, no. And I hung up on him. The next day, he called me back. And he said, do you remember how I told you not a lot of guys were going to give you this opportunity? You were taking this job? I said, yeah. He said, good. I took it for you. You're coaching for me. And by the way, you can't quit. Otherwise, the entire narrative surrounding women coaching in men's professional football will be, we had a girl once, and
no
she
pressure.
Quit. But boy, oh boy, did he have my number. Because I wouldn't have stepped up into that situation. I had to be drop-kicked into success. But what I wouldn't do is quit on every one of the women who I'd ever fought with and for. So he got me on that one. Women will look at a job situation just like that one. I've got everything, boom. I had 4 Super Bowls, 2 gold medals, 8-time Pro Bowler, but now I can't coach a football team because I'm not a man, okay? Because there were no women, so that was the only thing that could have done that, right? And yet guys have a much different philosophy. Guys will often do something like, oh, I don't know, I have a reality show. I can be president. Just saying.
Love it. Love it. Thank you, Jen. So women, you know, we don't really put our hat in the ring until we're 110%, meeting all of the specs on whatever job it is, whereas guys, 20%, 40%, I'm smart enough, I can figure it out. Mm-hmm. So the other thing the research says women don't do enough of is making the ask. In fact, women are great negotiators when they're negotiating on behalf of, you know, their kids or, you know, the mergers or anything for their company, but when it comes to their own careers, you know, they lag off and can understand why. There's always a double bind of, you know, she's too aggressive, not aggressive enough. But we'd love to hear from you, Joanne. You know, how do you make the ask for resources or for that next role when you aren't being considered? What's the nuanced way of doing that?
Sure. So I think for me, my experience has been to always ask when I had just accomplished something and I could point to an outcome. And so when I first joined the organization, we were going through a transformation. And one of the things that we had looked at was we developed what we called a campus. So it's a branch, a bank branch, but it no longer had a teller line, and we were offering different elements of what it meant to have financial education in an organization. And it was somewhat new at the time. And so I had worked very hard with a team of people over the course of probably 2 years on this project. And we finally had launched the project, and it was very successful. We got a lot of press, and a lot of customers were coming in and taking advantage of the space. And so my boss, you know, he was very generous with his praise and accolades and the board and everything like that. But then I noticed that that was where it kind of stopped. And so one of the things, because I work for a public company, the top five officers of the company, their salary information is public. And so I was a member of an executive management team, and I had done my research, and because I knew my worth, and so I wanted to understand what they were paying, you know, the other individuals that happened to be male at the company and hadn't been a part of this project. But so I did my research, and they were making a lot more money than I was. And so I decided, I got the guts up because I, you know, I had to talk myself through it and had to get all my research together. And, you know, I talked to my husband. He's like, you got to go in there. Finally did. I made an appointment with my boss, went into, had a meeting with him, and I just kind of presented my facts. And I had said, you know, here's all of the wonderful things I had just done on this project over the last 2 years. Here's, you know, some of the milestones, the accomplishments. Here's what we, as an organization, had returned our shareholders because of the project. Mm-hmm. And I was just curious about my next steps and my next opportunities. And so he had talked to me, and he's a very supportive boss, so I don't need to think that he's not, but he's been my best supporter. But he was talking more off into the future. And so I finally had the courage to say, you know, would it be okay if I were to sit with our HR department and have a study done on my salary?
And would it be okay?
I know, I asked for permission. I did something terrible. I asked for permission, which I say never ask for permission. But I did. Mm-hmm. But he agreed to it. And so then I had worked with my HR department, and we did an executive study, and it came out that I was grossly underpaid. And so they went back with the information, and then, thank God, I was able to get a raise. But, you know, I struck when the iron was hot. Around accomplishments, pointing to outcomes, and then I also had done my research on knowing how much I should be making, and you know, had a general sense, and then had partnered with my HR department.
Yeah. So you were data-driven. You talked about what you could and are already doing for
yes.
the company, and most importantly, you made that appointment
yes.
after talking to
yes.
your husband and
yes.
board of directors.
Yeah, a lot of friends and a lot of encouragement, yes.
Fantastic. Cindy, we have a number of entrepreneurs and leaders of their own ventures here, and with the pink ceiling and the pinkubator.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what do you look for when you are committing capital to ideas, women's ideas? Like, what are the top three things that would make you commit capital to?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I'm never really investing in the idea. I'm investing in the person who will execute the idea. It all comes down to people. That's all I care about. And when they come in, I think there are a few characteristics. I have one of my outstanding founders sitting in the second row right here, who's a local in Philly, Bethany Edwards, who runs Leah Diagnostics. She's going to reinvent the pregnancy test. It's completely flushable.
Oh, wow.
80%
nice.
Of a pregnancy test is plastic, and why the hell is that the case? Only a woman could invent that. But when I look at Bethany, I'll use her as an example because I'm staring at her right now. You know, as I start to evaluate what are those qualities that I'm looking for, she is completely resourceful. And I need to know that. And she's, you know, there's a DNA of curiosity. I know that Bethany is going to, she does not necessarily have the answer, but she, by God, is going to find it out because she's wired with that. She's always listening and learning and not just posturing and saying she already has the idea. To your point on Jen earlier, constantly learning, going back and getting her doctorate. I think that wired with that is absolutely one of the characteristics of an outstanding leader, because they're gonna check themselves and make sure that they're listening and applying those along the way. And I think it's also that she's resourceful in her network. Entrepreneurship, and you know, even sitting in a C-suite, it's incredibly lonely. And I talk to female founders who come and approach me, and one of my questions for them is, what is your network today? And if they can't answer that, if they're not spending time going out to co-working spaces and hanging out with other people on the same journey as them, if they haven't been brave enough to, you know, tweet at somebody, cold call them, do whatever it takes just to get a little bit of advice or a little bit of time, they are going to be paralyzed at some moment down the line when they've run headfirst into a brick wall. They've got to actually have developed that network as well.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. Jen, I imagine there's many awkward moments for you in different boardrooms, different locker rooms, surrounded with men, you know, in the Me Too era. Like, how do you diffuse that tension, if there is any, or that awkwardness? Like, tell us, take us into the locker room, if you would.
Well, first of all, I think one of the things you have to recognize is situations that don't have to be awkward. Like, pick your battles, okay? Everybody asked me, how did I handle the locker room? I didn't go in. Okay, I mean, really, honestly, like, although in the coaching movies, there's this big epic coaching scene right before the guys take the field, that doesn't happen. If you are like having to really seriously coach guys before the game, you haven't done your homework. Like that is 911 in the coaching world if you're trying to adjust right before the game. Okay? So the locker room is actually kind of a place of peace for the guys to relax before the game. No one ever told me like you can't go in the locker room. I just chose not to, because though I would be fine, my players would never make eye contact with me ever again, right? Like they'd be like, oh, coach, how you doing, right? So that is part of it. But the second one is being very situationally aware, right? If you are the odd woman or man out, you are the one that all the questions surround. So that first date awkward lies with you. Mm. And you're the one who can diffuse the situation. And humor is a great way to do that. Like, I remember when we were first in training camp, we're watching film one day, and I have a lot of appreciation for my mentor, Larry Foote, because he's straight Detroit. You don't ever have to question where you are with Larry. He'd be like, all right, so we doing this, girl. Hey, get that, da-da-da, we're doing this, boom. And you're like, great. So we had a great back and forth, you know, and, you know, I mean, my dad's from Jersey, so we just, you know, we rib each other. That's what we do, right? And the players had yet to figure out if they could do that. Like, could we joke with her? Or, you know, was I fragile? They didn't know, right? So one day we're in meetings, and one of my guys kind of sort of tried to tiptoe his way around a joke, but it was so bad that, like, it was just kind of, it was a lot funny to me, right? And so I jumped up and I threw my hands on the table and I was like, listen, son, if you're gonna go there with me, you better go all the way in, because I have a doctorate in psychology and I will own you. And from there, Larry Foote just kind of looked at him, looked at me, did like this, and he goes, any other questions, or can we get back to film now? Right? But humor allows for relationships to develop, and it breaks through that awkward. And if you were in my last session, you all know I have a saying that I use quite often, and it's giving credit between the thing that happens very often, and I call it disconnection between the brain and the mouth. Right? Something was up there and it didn't necessarily come out, and you're giving them the benefit of the doubt to assume that it was not intentional. Right? And so I would literally just look at them and I'd be like, yo, you do realize you said that out loud, right? Yes. And good people will look at you and they'll be like, oh my God, no, this is not what I meant, right? And they have a chance to recover. Like, I actually just meant this, and you're like, no, we're good. I just want you to know that you should never, ever say that in the outside of the outside world, because they won't understand it like I did, or let those words come out again. And good people will see that as an opportunity to refresh and enhance your relationship. Whereas if you're dealing with a jerk, they'll say the same wrong thing in the same wrong way, or double down. They will get in deeper, and then you know what you're dealing with there too. Right, but that keeps you from a lot of unnecessary freakouts, right?
I love that so much. Yeah. That's great advice.
And for this one, by the way, humor. I just have to say, y'all, this, we connected on such a, like, just respect and, like, everything level, coming from such different areas of the world, that like I was like, we have to do something together. I think we could really like really make a lot of people nervous. And so, I mean, she'll get text messages from me sometimes because, you know, she's in science and I'm not, but I'm good at seeing problems. And I'll be like, hey, can we do something about this? Like, and at any time of night, really.
That's right. I still
think we're gonna figure that out sometime.
So I want to talk about the whole be yourself and be who you are and be true to yourself, because clearly it's important, but what I've learned from these women is that there is a difference between acting and performing. You don't want to act, you don't want to be inauthentic or someone you're not, but you know, you do have to pick moments when you're performing at your best, performing a role. So I'd love to ask you guys, you know, Cindy, starting with you, what have you had to amp up or amp down or change about yourself as you've sort of ascended the leadership roles, but particularly in your latest role?
You know, I think actually getting into the C-suite was, this is going to be counterintuitive, was less about showing strength and more about showing vulnerability. And I think that you will not have people who will come and follow you and wake up every day and go to work for you and give it their all unless you are completely honest and open with them. And, you know, when I went on this ride of getting the first ever drug approved for sexual dysfunction in women, you can imagine that it looked somewhat like a roller coaster, including getting that through the FDA. And at one point, we got a rejection, and it blindsided me. I'd done all the work, I'd gotten to all of the outcomes, you know, the science and the data, I had the right answer. And yet they said no. And I can remember, I just got off a plane, I got a text message, and I sat in an airport, and I don't think I moved for 2 hours. And I had to go into my company, the little company who could, and people who'd put blood, sweat, and tears into it, and deliver this news. And I was just all in honest. And we all cried together. We all thought, this is it. Like, this is the end of the company. And I didn't have the answer. I didn't know what was next. I didn't come in to deliver the great motivational speech. I didn't know where we were going from there. And I can remember going home that weekend. I took to the bed. There were a lot of tears. And and over the course of that weekend, I went back to my inbox. And so many women had so kindly written me and told me, like, shared their deepest personal struggles and said, don't give up. Like, I need you. And I remembered why I had done it in the first place, what was driving me every day to break through with the first. And I went into the office on Monday and I said, we're gonna dispute the FDA. But it was because of that vulnerability, that honesty with people, that they came on the ride with me and they stuck with me through all of the bumps and all of the twists and turns.
Yeah. How do you take on the FDA?
How do you take them on? You dispute them. I call it the road less traveled, but we actually fought the FDA and ultimately won. And what won was science, but in the end, actually, women won.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about you, Joanne, in the very, you know, tight boundaries of financial services? What have you had to alter, change, if anything, about your style as you went up the curve?
I think in my role, I'm a very sensitive person, and so I take a lot of things to heart. And the one thing that I've learned coming up the ladder is that you have to be very resilient. I had to toughen up a lot and not, you know, let more things roll off of my shoulders and not take everything so personally, because you are met with a lot of challenges, a lot of people questioning why you're in the room, or you know, discounting some of your thoughts, or you know, things like that. And so I think it actually, once I made the decision that I had to, you know, toughen up, it made me more motivated to continue the journey and to push through and to you know, work harder. So yeah, I pushed along a long time for 22 years in the financial services industry, and you know, going up the ladder, you saw less and less women, and I just learned to kind of take the boys right on and toughen up and not stop at no.
Yeah. I was noticing in the speaker's lounge, a ton of people are doing the power poses just to be resilient and get their blood flowing. Do you have any hacks for us as to how are you resilient? Like, what are, you know, how do you have that thick skin? Because I'm a crier. My mom was a crier. You know, I turn red, you know, projectile tears. Like, how do you, clearly, I'm exaggerating, but not by much. How do you?
I do a lot of meditation, actually. Sometimes I have to go into my office and I cry. I mean, I still do cry, but I never let them see me sweat. Mm-hmm. And I'll take on all the issues, and I'll do it behind the scenes. I like to go to SoulCycle or use my Peloton and work out and, you know, try to get my anxiety out that way, and just try to keep myself focused. I also read a lot, so that kind of calms me down a lot and keeps me focused as well.
Yeah, what's the latest thing you're reading?
I'm actually, I was just talking about this earlier. I'm reading a book by Beth Comstock. Imagine
from
It Forward.
GE.
Yeah, from GE. Yeah. It's so far it's been a great
read. Book. Great book. Yeah. Excellent. Jen, were you born this way? Is there anything yet? Can we even aspire?
That would explain a lot.
kinda. I actually had this conversation with my dad not too long ago, and I was recalling this story of when I was a kid, and I had learned about Joan of Arc. I went to my dad, and all I said was, "Daddy." And he goes, "What, honey?" And I said, "It's a really good thing that I was born now, because they would have burned me at the stake." And I had this memory, and I was like, did I really say that? Or is that just, you know, like kind of what you hoped you were like as a child? And I said, "Dad, did I really say that?" And he goes, "Oh, yeah." And I said, "What did you think?" And he said, "Yeah, well, that's kind of you." But I give a lot of, like, who I am in terms of, like, as I say, an easy yes and a hard no to my dad, who is a military hero. He has a Silver Star and 2 Bronze Stars. And the early stories that he would tell me were about, you know, his job as a medic and pulling guys out of burning tanks. And he was, one of his favorite lines that I remember often, and I really think summarizes it very well, is, you know, he would say, "Jenny, I was a great warrior and a terrible soldier." And for those of you who know what that means, it's like, that's a lot of what I've done and epitomized throughout my career, is that, yes, I was very good and I would fight very hard and I would do anything and everything for everyone that I loved. But if your orders were BS, I would call you on it no matter what. And so you can be a great warrior and a terrible soldier, and that's probably me to a T.
Terrific. Thank you. Cindy, tell us about the pink, because after meeting you, the amount of pink in my wardrobe just geometrically increased. So tell us about, you know, pink. What's behind that. Yeah.
Pink for me is about owning it as a woman. And it started when I set out to have what people call the little pink pill. And when I started that, people would say, "Oh, the little pink pill." And the only thing that was missing was a pat on the shoulder and, "Oh, isn't that cute?" And when that happened, you know, you have two choices. That's either going to reel you back in frustration or self-doubt, or you're like me and the rest of the women on this panel, you go right toward it. Because that was the conversation we needed to be having. You know, pink is, again, owning it. I like pink. I've always liked pink. If you look back at childhood pictures of me, I'm always in pink. And I think that women actually painting the C-suite pink, there's a special thing we bring to the table. And we shouldn't be trying to suit up and look like the club that's there already. We should be owning those characteristics that are uniquely ours and will make us exceptional leaders.
Mm-hmm. So I am going to tag on to that.
Yeah, please.
Because in my career, I had this, and it's a lot the same thing, right? Like, I had this idea of what a football player looked like. And she was big, and she was tough, and she was strong, and she wore black. And when I did it, it was just kind of funny. because I'm 5'2". I was so small on the U.S. national team that they would call me kid because I really looked like I was running in and out of everybody like a little kid between your legs, right? Like I was fast and little and all of these things. And I would go to games and they would be like, oh, look, isn't it nice they let the cheerleaders ride on the bus? And I'd be like, cheerlead this. I'm a linebacker. I'm about to tackle you. And what I realized is that that's what made everybody else nervous.
Yeah.
Is that I was little and cute, and because they were uncomfortable about it, they were using it against me. And so one day it just clicked in my head. What if everything they're trying to use against me, mm-hmm. I own it?
Right.
And I threw out the black stuff. I took, you can't modify a football uniform that much, right? There's only certain deviations. So I laced up my shoelaces with pink shoelaces. I got a pink undershirt. I wore pigtail braids. I wore makeup. And I figured if I couldn't outbig them, I was going to outlittle them instead. And I would make sure that I tackled the biggest girl out there and then would be like, hey, baby, do you need a hand up? Because I'm going to be here all day. But I think you have to find your own game.
You do. The underestimation, I'm in a room full of women. We'll shoot it straight. You're going to be underestimated.
Yep.
Gonna happen.
When you walk into the boardroom, when you walk in to raise money, when you go in and ask for the promotion, they are underestimating you. That is the way it is. And so you're going to make a choice. You're either going to let that sit with you and push you back, or you're going to use it as an opportunity to surprise people.
Yep.
You're going to show up and kill with competence. That is the flip. It's underestimated to unapologetic. That's the pink.
And when you know that they don't like you and they can't stand that you're in there, you just smile, because everything that you already know that they're going to use against you is your strategic advantage.
Great. Well, I could go on forever, but I think would love to hear your questions. So,
don't be shy.
Yes, because that's the point.
It's certainly not in this room.
You know, before we open up the questions to the audience, why doesn't everyone put their hands together and let's thank the panel for this lively presentation. We're going to open up to all of you to please come to the microphones and ask questions. But before we do that, let's ask each of the panelists, starting with Shoma. Could you provide maybe just one or two key tips or pearls that each of us could take away today as we're thinking about how to accelerate our own careers?
Right. So this resonates a lot with me because I'm not good at it at all. But taking stock of your network, and whether you're men or women, you know, it's very important to have three types of networks in your constellation. The first is an operational network, people who help you get your work done, people who, you know, fill in the blanks for you. The second is a strategic network, people who will stretch you, people who will tell you things you wouldn't otherwise encounter in the course of a day, people who expand your horizons, maybe introduce you to different people. And then the third is a developmental or psychosocial network, people who you could cry with, and you know they can help rebuild you, because we all need it, right? And I think I've been remiss about really taking stock of my network. I've been pretty good at the operational, but not as much on the strategic, certainly not as much on the psychosocial, but you know, it's hard to be planful about that, but you know, just analyze your networks quickly. And the second is, there are four behaviors that, you know, the most successful C-suite folks portray. And they're decisive more often than not. They're 12 times more decisive than, you know, less performing C-suite folks. The most important factor is reliability. Of course, you say, you know, of course they execute, but they are very consistent. They're not volatile. They put in the systems. They hire the right people. You know, they're never late to meetings. You could sort of run trains, you know, on that clock. The third is engaging for impact. And we say impact rather than affinity, because there's a lot of people who like to be liked, But those who engage for impact are always thinking about, well, what am I trying to do for my company? Is this the right long-term decision? And that means conflict, right? And we all shirk from conflict. And then the final one is adapting. And adapting is a couple of things. Certainly adapt to all the change that we hear about and be strategic. But really, you know, we don't spend enough time to think about the business because we're so in the business. So very simple things like blocking out your calendar every morning to make sure, you know, nobody gets in your head before you get in your head. So a lot of the habits of top people, they will, you know, wake up at 5 a.m. and 5 to 9, nothing will be scheduled. So they get a couple of most important things out. But before each meeting or before big presentation, make sure that hour's blocked off so you can actually prepare. Because, you know, it's great that introverts have the same odds of success, but to get there, you kind of have to, you know, present and perform without acting. So with that, I will...
Joanne, would you like to share your thoughts?
Sure. I think my words of wisdom would be to find a sponsor if you're in the corporate world. I've definitely benefited from that. My boss actually has been a tremendous sponsor for me. And it happened very naturally, which I wouldn't recommend going up and asking someone to be your sponsor, but it was just a natural relationship that was born based on me being able to perform, but then him being able to rely on me as well. And so we worked very well together over the course of a couple of years, and then he naturally was beginning to sponsor and talk about my abilities and my experience and my accomplishments to the board. And I think it just naturally happened. And I really do believe that was a very important part of mm-hmm. I'm here because of that.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Sure. Jen, would you like to share?
What do you want me to share?
Just to kind of maybe the top one thing that each of us could do tomorrow or Monday, depending on how we work, that we could really either do or not do that you think will have the biggest impact on accelerating our careers and getting us to where we want to go.
I think you have to figure out where your passion point is.
Yes.
Okay? All of the hard work, all of the ups and downs, all of the rights and lefts, all of the people resisting you or underestimating you or any of those things, it's not intellectualized through. Like, there has to be something deep in your core that resonates with you that allows you to, you know, play for something bigger, fight for something bigger, do things that you would not do for yourself if it had no implications for anybody else. Mm-hmm. When I played on the men's team, like, if that was just me and you said, guess what, you can show up and get tackled by dudes every day for a season, no one will know. It will have no implications on the rest of society, but you may never get up. Would you do it? Heck no, I would not. But would I get tackled, get back up, do it again, knowing that the world had not cared about women playing football until I was willing to get tackled by men all day, every day, and I would do it again.
So before we move to Cindy, I'm going to just take a quick moment because I think there's an opportunity for me to express some gratitude to a leader that's in our audience today. Jen, you mentioned that a leader, the guy you started in the NFL, took a chance on you. And Ivy Hall, who's here in the audience, one of our gentlemen, and here, please stand up for just a second.
Yeah.
Woo. Ivy is a leader that took a chance on me about 10 years ago.
Wait, we can't hear you. Hold on.
Okay, Ivy was a leader that took a chance on me about 10 years ago, and from the heart, I really appreciate that. It was pivotal in my own career, so thank you for that.
Aww.
And Cindy, what would you recommend that we take away? Something actionable that we can do or not do, maybe just to help us move forward in our careers.
I'm going to give you two quick things. So the first thing is I need all of you to stop thinking about risk in the short term.
Yeah.
We think about risk as, oh, if I do this, then this will happen. Or what if I take this shot and next week I have less money? Or what you have to do is you have to think about the long-term risk. What happens if I don't take this shot? And if you can think that on Monday, I'm going to bet you're going to start to make some decisions differently. We get stuck here when we need to be playing the long game. And the other thing that I would say is the career ladder is dead. Don't treat your career like a ladder. Treat it like a jungle gym and swing toward the opportunities that are going to truly stretch you, and you'll get to exactly where you want to
awesome.
Go.
Ooh, I like that one.
That's really good.
Yeah, that's great. Feels like a jungle, so a jungle gym.
Yeah, right. It is.
Might need to be a jungle Jane, though. I'm just saying.
Next book.
Yeah, so there are microphones in the room, so I do encourage you. I'm sure folks have questions, so please jump up. Yeah, yeah. Please jump to the microphone and ask your question.
First of all, I found this to be very inspirational. This is the first time I'm attending, and I work with Colleen and these great people from Johnson & Johnson, so thank you for giving me the opportunity to come here and hear these wonderful women. So my question is to Shoma, since you've done all this research with 18,000 applicants and C-suite, right. You know, I still notice from the data that trend of percent men versus women is not dramatically changing year after year.
Yeah.
So what can we do as organizations to drive a faster change rather than have so many kind of disgruntled employees at the manager level?
Right. That's a great question. A great question. And, you know, we even looked at our firm, like, how do we get to 51%? Because it's, you know, a consulting firm, it's 80 people, but still, like, 50% women. And you've all heard of the blind test, if you just get rid of the name on top of a resume, or if you, you know, audition violinist behind a curtain. I think, you know, there's a lot of truth to that. If you just look at the data and the results, you know, what did they do and how did they do it as an organization versus what's the aura or the horn around them? What's somebody saying? You know, do they seem shy? You really hone it down to what have they done, how have they done it, and do they have followers, right? So as an organization, you know, can this person, you know, go somewhere and will people follow them? Because that's in very short supply. And as women, you know, women tend to care about engaging impactfully and caring about people and showing vulnerability, and that's a very important quality. So I think as organizations is, how do you filter out as many biases as we can? And it's, biases are human, you know, it's natural, but, you know, to have enough challengers in the room when you're doing succession planning or talent reviews to say, wait, you know, yeah, maybe you're saying she has sharp elbows, but what does that mean? And we're going to hear from Serena Williams over lunch. You know, she, you know, different things mean different things. Different, you know, characteristics mean different things in men and women. So to have a couple of challengers in the room, almost designating a few challengers, say, when you hear this, what are you going to do? That makes a big difference.
That's great. Let's take the next question. I think we have just a little bit of time left. So,
thanks so much. It's really insightful. You talked about some of the career transitions, people going lateral, people taking the next jump. You know, it can happen in many ways. But for a person who is looking at these opportunities, what are the key things they want to look out in this future role? And also, what are the key things they need to check in before they take that risk? Do you have any suggestions on that?
Anyone, yes. Right? Yes. I'm going to defer to Joanne for that, like, because you've done that many times.
Yeah.
What's the decision criteria that you would, you know, maybe earlier in your career?
I think, I mean, honestly, it goes back to, you know, what do you want to do?
But, I mean, is it health of the organization or the managers that are actually leading that?
Yeah.
And the potential to, you know, expand your network, like, you know, things like that. There are several areas that could impact your decision.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering, do you see anything that's really striking that you want to make sure
that
organization that it's there, like if you're trying to move into that organization?
Okay. Definitely the culture of the organization is critical.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're looking to go into an organization, I think you need to do a lot of research on the culture of the organization and, you know, do they have employee resource groups, for example, that women or, you know, anyone can join to help them build that network and the skills and experience capabilities, things like that.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah.
And to your earlier point, you know, what do my sponsors or mentors say, right? So because there is risk involved if you're going to move. So the first thing you want to ask yourself is, how is this going to add to my story? If it's more of the same, if it's, you know, lateral moves are great, but it has to add to your story. Like, what am I gaining next that I don't already have? The second is, you know, is this problem fixable? Is this, the scorecard that they're going to measure me by? Is it, can I do it? And not just, you know, check yourself if I'm competent, but it's more, are they asking the impossible? Do I have the resources that I need? Because when people offered me jobs, it's like, oh, you don't have any resources. We're looking for you to be strategic and be the arms and legs of everything. And, you know, lesson learned, you can't do all of that. And how do you negotiate for success? And the third is thinking the short term and the long term, right? If you fail, and which is perfectly natural, what's it going to add? And, you know, how risky is it? How do you keep it from, you know, becoming a true blow up? And getting that network in line with you is, don't go at it alone.
Yeah. Thank you.
And finally, keep your mind and body in working shape. That's the most, you know, don't tire yourself out. Don't do pull all nighters at you know, nauseam. Keeping your mind and body in good shape is huge.
Yeah, Shoma, it sounds like we have some strategy components and some action components.
Yes.
And if you just even do one of each to get started, that you'll be in good shape, right, just to start.
Quite right.
Yeah. All right, let's take our last question. Here we go. Yeah, please.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my question. So I'm a new financial advisor starting my own practice, and I want to work with women in business, especially women entrepreneurs. So my question is, do you have any tips for how to be successful in that endeavor, and how can I make myself the most useful?
Cindy and Joanne.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
My answer is, if you want to be successful, go find them where they're all hanging out, just to put yourself in front of them. I think that's important, so you're in the right room. And and I think that, you know, in order to be successful with them, it's to grow with them. I was thinking, actually, in just the last question, and maybe there's a slight applicability here as well, is I think we as women, we think very much in terms of salary and less about incentive. And even when we talk in the you know, entire national conversation about, you know, the wage gap and everything else, we really wrestle with this idea of getting more, where what we could do is walk in the room and frame it as skin in the game. How do you get skin in the game? And whether you're an entrepreneur who's starting it on your own or you're inside of a corporation, you know, that's what made me ultimately start companies for myself, is I thought, why the hell am I creating all this value for other people and making them very wealthy when I should be creating the value for myself and making myself very wealthy? Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, helping them think through structures like that, even as they're growing their businesses and understanding that incentive always matters to their ultimate success, and foregoing sometimes a little bit, you know, even though it makes us mad. Like, I don't have quite as much salary as I expect, but damn it, I walked in there and I set the metrics to measure me by, to have, and I will be rewarded for that. And that actually is really setting me up for the next promotion and everything else, even if you forego. So my idea of being helpful to entrepreneurs in the process is, you'll be part therapist, and you'll also help them, I think, of their entire financial picture, including how they incentivize those to come and grow with them.
So great questions. I know couldn't get to all the questions in the room before our time is up, but I know that I've been wowed by this all-star panel. I mean, your competency, but your competitiveness and your ability to stay true to who you are as individuals really blows me away. And I just want to thank you. And on behalf of the audience, let's put our hands together and thank this panel. As you guys are looking at your agendas, please take some time to stop by the bookstore. You can find books related to the topic today. Most notably, you can read about more of the research that we discussed. The book's called The CEO Next Door. And please check your app and program books for details on your next sessions. Thank you all. Oh, thanks, Jen, and Jen's book as well. Thank you.